The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
We've got the CEO of the Committee for Geelong, Jennifer Cromarty, on the line. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks, Mitchell. How are you?
Good, thank you. Happy to be at this point, I suppose.
I think we've had an incredibly busy, let's say, week. I mean, it's been a pretty, you know, obviously interesting year. When you say pleased to be at this point, I'm pleased that we've been able to reopen. I'm pleased that we've been able to, what are we saying, we've eliminated it now in terms of the virus, and pleased that hopefully we can relax a bit and enjoy our family at Christmas.
And I should just mention the latest figures from the DHHS for today, zeros everywhere. Yesterday there was one death, but today all zeros. So that's wonderful news once again.
Oh, yes. No, I haven't seen the news today, but it's interesting how we were following it every day with bated breath, and now we're just like, oh, another zero. But, you know, it's just a real testament to not just the people of Melbourne, but really that, you know, the country's really done an incredible job, and Australia, look, considering a couple of other things that are going on in the global sphere, I think Australia's doing exceptionally well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, in terms of your research at the Committee for Geelong, it's called Your Resilient Geelong Research, and I read about it over the weekend. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, well, it was actually a project that we started before COVID, and Professor Louise Johnston was actually involved with the Gateways to Growth report. So the report that we launched a year ago in Canberra with Minister Tudge, she was one of the key academics in that piece of research. So I had a meeting with her in January, and she told me about another project that she was working on, which was analysing Geelong's economic history over 30 to 40 years. She was using all the City of Greater Geelong's economic data, the economic indicators. And she'd written a short piece which she basically posited this theory that Geelong was extraordinary, and that, you know, we'd rebounded from significant shocks to our economy, including, you know, go back to the textile and clothing sector, to pyramid, you know, really absolutely massive hit to our economy back in the 90s. Then you move into the global financial crisis, to Ford and Alcoa obviously closing their plants, their manufacturing plants, to COVID. And she posited that Geelong is incredibly resilient, and she does quite a big study around what is resilience. But I said, look, I was really interested if she could, and we could fund her to deep dive into that data a bit more. And we started discussing that research, and then obviously COVID hit. So I actually asked her to overlay that data with an international desktop review of, you know, what country, other countries, and what other ideas that we could learn from, to say, okay, Geelong, if we're going to recover, you know, if we're going to continue to be resilient, what is the best and brightest around the world saying about economic recovery in this environment? So the research project went on a bit longer than we originally thought. Obviously, it's only just been published, but in essence, Geelong is resilient. The Productivity Commission has rated Geelong as an incredibly resilient economy across Australia already. And we're really hoping that with the series of recommendations, case studies, examples, that the whole of Geelong really can have a look at this report and say, look, there's some things in there that they might be interested in taking on themselves. It's not all about, you know, the Committee for Geelong or even levels of government, but certainly about saying, you know, we've got this great history. Let's have a lot of hope and faith, not just in the way our economy is structured, but also in the people. You know, we're a really resilient community, and we do work together when we need to.
And what does the report suggest in terms of how well we may recover from the economic downturn that we've experienced this year?
Yeah, there's quite a few recommendations in there. And you know, in essence, it's basically saying that we've got some strategic opportunities. So some of these won't be a surprise to anyone, but, you know, there's a lot of opportunities in sectors like health, education, you know, getting our sectors that are delivering skills to adapt to the changing environment, particularly to the future of work, which the committee's done a lot of work on. We've got opportunities, and it's across the board. We go through sector by sector, but what it essentially says is Geelong has both a diverse economy but also sector specialisations, and having a combination of both those things, which sound contradictory, have actually meant we've been resilient. So, you know, even just this week there was the announcement about the Centre for Infectious Diseases here in Geelong, with Deakin, Barwon Health and CSIRO coming out with some new findings around the virus. And you look at that, that's global impact. You know, we've got incredible diversity and deep skills here in Geelong that are going to help us. So they're examples of the sorts of things it does recommend is let's deep dive and actually become specialists. But also we are a growing community. And one of the key reasons, there's three key reasons why we're resilient, according to Professor Johnson, but one is that we have had population growth and we are going to continue to grow. And in COVID, again, you've probably seen the reports that people in Melbourne and other areas, in particularly metropolitan areas, are really interested in moving to the region. So that hasn't stopped, and we're seeing pretty significant data now that says that people are wanting to move, and that's partly because we're a great place to live, we've got everything you need, but also because obviously people were concerned around density of living. But it's more about the flexibility of the workplace. So, you know, hopefully what's going to happen is for people who can and may continue to want to, that they can work whether it's from home or just from the town that they actually live in, which has huge environmental impacts as well as social impacts for people. It gives them a lot of flexibility and choice. So Geelong is incredibly well positioned to take advantage of all of that.
So where do people go if they want to read the report? Is it on your website?
It is, so committeeforgeelong.com.au, and I think we've got a pop-up on the website, thanks to Holly, who worked with our web guides to make it easy for people to find. So it's, look, it's 116 pages, but hopefully it's quite easy to navigate and you can pick up the sections that you're really interested in. We've done, and I just want to thank also Rebecca Bartell, who's done a mammoth job. She's at Deakin University in working on this report as well with Dr. Meg Mundell, and they've made it a really, hopefully, digestible report for everyone.
Now, the state budget dropped last week, so you probably had a bit of time to process all of the information. What were the highlights for you?
Oh, I think there was a lot of stuff that came out pre-budget, and you'd be aware of the fast rail or faster rail announcement with the state matching the federal government with the $2 billion. So it was a $4 billion commitment there for Geelong. But look, we were really thrilled for Adam Curragh House, and I'll declare I'm on the board of Adam Curragh House, which is a community hospice here in Geelong. And we've been planning to build a new hospice at Deakin University Warren Ponds, and getting $5 million from the state was just something that's been a long-term advocacy initiative. And we just want to thank, and I know the committee were involved with this, but the COVID Collective did identify this as a project of need. So that was obviously a personal thrill, but obviously a great one for community. But look, we looked at a whole range of things that were announced, and you know, as I said, fast rail was one that the committee and others had been advocating for a really long time. There's been a lot of coverage about it. It's a really long-term project. It's a significant, obviously, investment, but also a significant piece of infrastructure that's going to connect Geelong and Melbourne. But there's a couple of things I just wanted to say. One was Geelong will have the choice of going via Sunshine, which is the existing route, to the new Melbourne Airport rail link, which is fantastic, but also going back onto the Werribee line, which is what the committee has been looking for some time. And that's based on feedback from significant organisations here in Geelong who see the economic benefit of being connected back to Werribee. It's a really big economic and social corridor for us. But it also provides opportunity to have the discussion around getting a train station for Avalon Airport. So while we're really excited, we can see the forward planning. You know, we look to obviously having the Warren Ponds duplication work finished, which will help with the fast rail connection. We also then can see there's money in the budget to do a business case for the potential for another crossing or tunnel for South Geelong. Once we get all of that done, we can then look at the more deeper and longer term connections that we need to get Geelong even faster into Melbourne. So the announcement was Laverton to Werribee for the extra track. But then obviously we'd want to look at the solutions for Laverton into Melbourne and beyond, which may or may not be Metro 2, another big tunnel. So Avalon Airport Rail Station, Metro 2, there's going to be a lot more that we're going to look for down the track, but, you know, great announcement for Geelong.
It sounds like from the PTUA's point of view, there's still quite a few questions as to how it's all going to work. And one of those I think you've touched on, which was what happens as the trains go into Melbourne, or will they be stuck behind the metropolitan services, which was the whole reason why they built the regional rail link in the first place?
Look, there's a couple of things, and I've had about multiple briefings on this. So I'll say a couple of things in terms of the transport users. They want frequency, reliability, capacity. So they agree that this solution will deliver that hopefully down in the long term in terms of greater capacity, so how we actually look at train stations themselves and getting more carriages on the line. So there's a few things in that that we need to look at. But when we actually look at getting into Southern Cross, one of the big things that people probably don't get that excited about when they talk about rail is signalling. So I'm not sure if people are aware, but V-Line has long been working on almost like a manual signalling system. And if I'm a long-term commuter, Mitchell, up until not that long ago, and it was signal failure, it was, you know, the level crossings. So the big, and there's quite a big commitment in there to actually upgrade the signalling. Look at that as actually being one of the key issues. So when you're actually coming into a platform or into Southern Cross, that we actually have a far more efficient way to manage the signalling and also look at the level crossing. So there's a staged approach to this, and hopefully, you know, down the track, no pun intended, there will be other announcements that will actually facilitate an even faster journey. But most organisations I've spoken to and their users have said if we can get in there under 50 minutes, 45 minutes, even 40, it's frequency, reliability and capacity and just having a far more efficient rail service.
Well, the only competition to those times is really driving on the roads, and that can take sometimes 70-plus minutes depending on the traffic. So if it's 40 or 50 minutes, it probably doesn't make much of a difference given that the main competition is driving.
Yeah, correct. And as I said, as a long-term commuter, you know, if it was half an hour or 40 minutes or 50 minutes, it's not a huge issue as long as it gets there within the realm of being punctual, as you'd be kind of aware. That's the thing. Most people will plan their trips according to a timetable. So they just want to be able to get a seat on the train and get there within a time frame that they understand and can plan for. And it's a very comfortable journey on V-Line, and you can work. And I actually found that, you know, if it was if it's too quick, it's very hard to settle in and actually get some work done. So there's quid pro quo in a couple of things, and that's just my personal view. But, yeah, this discussion will be going on for some time, but I think we should welcome the announcement and see that there are other cities in this country who would love to have this announcement. But the governments of both levels have actually said quite clearly Geelong is really important. Geelong is going to continue to grow, and they are committed to investing in Geelong, which is good news for us, but it also means we've got a plan for, you know, a doubling of our population, which in the next 20 to 30 years, it's a pretty significant task for us. So it's good to see these announcements.
And it sounds like from what you're saying, they'll be using the existing rolling stock, and then maybe there's a view to upgrade that later on, although I think you'd have to go to electric if you want the really fast rail. So it sounds like they're just going to run the same rolling stock down a new track unless you've heard anything different.
Yeah, look, it needs to be the same stock for now. I mean, you know, I remember when we got the first Velocity trains, it was pretty exciting. But my understanding is all the plans will include the potential for electrification down that track. Again, no pun intended. But, you know, I think that these things are all part of why it's taken so long to get the planning done. And they're not ruling out opportunities and obviously trying to future-proof that line as much as possible. So, you know, I was speaking to a member the other day who said, Jen, why aren't we talking about a Hyperloop? So, you know, there's always going to be other things that we can consider. And I think Air Uber, I don't know where that's at, but there's a whole lot of other options in the future that may supersede or challenge or provide more options for us. So I think we just have to make sure our options are open, and that's my understanding.
And you mentioned the train station at Avalon. What do we need to get that up and running? It sounds like crossing the highway is a problem, so you'd have some sort of station near Lara and then a shuttle bus or something, would you?
No, I think we want a station, actually a new station at Avalon. So, you know, Lara is already at capacity. You know, there's not a lot of room there for car parking as it is. And my understanding is Justin Giddings, the CEO at Avalon Airport, wants a train station at Avalon, so a brand new station, but then actually have it as the terminal. So rather having a terminal where it is at the moment is actually move the terminal to the train station and then shuttle people, as you do in many countries across the world, shuttle people onto the planes via another vehicle.
Yes.
So the idea is, and my understanding is, again, it doesn't cost them that much to build a train station. It becomes then timetabling and all the things that go with it. So we don't need a spur. We don't need any extra rail line infrastructure. It's just a station. But the terminal itself would be the big investment. And there's some pretty fantastic plans that they've got out at Avalon. So really what we're waiting for is the government to make an announcement. So that will be the next thing that we will be or have already been speaking to government about.
Yeah, and I suppose you could have the train station on one side of the highway and then have the airport sky train or whatever actually bring people across the highway potentially, maybe.
I would have to go into a bit more detail there, but yes, there's a lot to discuss, but it really means we need Avalon Airport to be competitive particularly with Airport Rail Link, what, 9 years away. We need to make sure Avalon is also competitive and a big option for us in Victoria for people to travel.
Well, thank you for being on the program, and this is the final time that we'll be speaking to you until February. I mean, when you think about this year, I suppose everyone says COVID, but have there been any other things that have really jumped out at you about this particular year, 2020?
Gosh, I mean, it is going to be the year of the pandemic, but look, this is just, again, a personal kind of observation, but, you know, I know that there are people who've said they've been able to really obviously get to know the people that they live with a lot better. I think this idea around flexible work and the use of digital technology is absolutely transforming the way that people socialise and do work. Now, we're not going to be on Zooms or all day, every day moving forward. I think people have realised the technology has its limits in terms of how you would use it, but it's basically expedited the use of this technology, and I think people are going to think, oh, I probably don't have to fly XYZ for that meeting. I can get a lot done and be very efficient with my time, and then hopefully even have more time with my family at home, doing a whole lot of other things, and maybe have a bit more of a rounded existence. But that's just my view, and I think that I've already seen that, you know, at the committee we're going to be looking at how we actually manage our meetings in those environments, and maybe having a hybrid approach in the future so that then it becomes more accessible for people. You know, people miss out often on really important briefings because there's a issue with travelling to the venue, or, you know, even just taping those briefings now and allowing members to watch those briefings later in their own time. It's just opened up, I think, a lot more opportunity. So hopefully, and I'll be a motherhood statement here, Mitchell, but hopefully the world comes out of this as a better, kinder and far more accessible community.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on the program, and I will talk to you again in February.
Yeah, and hopefully I can see you, Mitchell.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see what happens. Thank you very much. Jennifer Cromarty joining us there, the CEO of the Committee for Geelong.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.